morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, January 14th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. First, a few headlines just to get things rolling. Well, hey-ho, Gitmo, Guantanamo Bay concentration camp. Let's just call it what it is. Celebrates its 12th birthday. A care director, that's the Council for American Islamic Relations, director Ibrahim Hooper, spoke at a rally marking the anniversary of indefinite detention. And lawyers for Mohammed Mahmoud are seeking, or however you prefer it, his name to be pronounced. I've heard in the Muslim community, but actually Somali friends, so who told me to say it that way? Seeking additional documents 2 months after prosecutors admitted that they had relied on evidence obtained under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act in building the case against him. Interestingly enough, the surveillance, the architecture of surveillance, and we'll be joined by Ingrid Barrington. She has done a terrific article, and the photographs that accompany it are just brilliant on the actual, literally the architecture of surveillance, what it physically looks like, and what they've done, these various agencies of surveillance, is create such a complicated mess that when it comes time to sorting things out, who exactly spied on the subject and when, that lawyers literally trip themselves up. And last night's school board meeting here in Portland, members Albert Steve Buell and Andrew Davidson stood up and walked out while students were still speaking. One senior from Cleveland High School and a member of the Portland Student Union brought the board meeting to a halt, he making speech in support of teachers. Funny how Americans love to loudly proclaim their support for education and at the same time ripping the funding out from under it. And Trader Joe's development in a historically African-American neighborhood would never have been considered when the neighborhood... Isn't that interesting? Trader Joe's would never have considered putting a shop there when demographic complexion was a bit darker. But now that this traditionally African-American neighborhood is a lot paler, it's a pale ghost of its former self. Now, here comes Joe. And I-84 near Hood River was hit by, what did you say, a rock? You've got to be kidding. A rock has attacked Hood River? No, actually, it was a large rock. And if corporations want to be people, then they need to play by the same rules that people have to play by and pay people's dues. That, at any rate, is what Senator Elizabeth Warren has teamed up with Republican Senators Tom Coburn of Oklahoma to introduce a bill that would take aim at the efficacy and malfeasance of government settlements by actually, wait for it, requiring federal enforcement agencies to reveal more details about the deals that they come up with when corporations are guilty of misconduct. It's only fair, isn't it? And Chris Hedges imagines what a real NSA would look like on the Real News Network. Hopefully we'll have him on tomorrow. And finally, tents, get this, tents provided by the United Nations to three Palestinian families, about 26 people in all, after Israel destroyed their homes last Wednesday. The Israeli forces came back and destroyed the tents. It's rather like the American double tap system. Looking forward to having Ingrid Barrington on the show today. That will require having an actual and real phone number for Ingrid Barrington. Until such time, I am asking our extraordinary board, John and Allison, to return us to that awful intro music while I find the correct telephone number. See, that wasn't so bad. We are trying to, in fact, any listeners out there who would like to take a run at coming up with another bit of theme music, go ahead. It sounds like a good project on a rainy January evening. Last year, at least 110 trains carrying a flammable type of crude oil from North Dakota passed through Portland and Vancouver. Each train, an average of 70,000 barrels to Terminal Point in Point Westward, near Tlatskanai. Dan Sears was on recently talking about the dangers of this and the what this presents to the community and to the way of life around Port Westward. The trains were loaded with the same type of oil that exploded three high-profile accidents since July. There's three of them so far. And it began in Quebec, and 47 people were killed. Granted, that was right bang in the middle of a small town. And the North Dakota oil trains are new to the region, and so are the risks. Our so-called cadres of experts have come up with five key takeaways. There are environmental regulations, of course, in Oregon and Washington that didn't seem to be able to come up with anything usable in the way of legislation to prevent this from happening. Of course, small independent groups have been weighing in for quite a while now with some very reasonable and very doable solutions. The most prominent, of course, is just don't bring these things through our region. We don't want them. We don't need them. No one needs it. And turning the trains back is about the smartest thing that we could do for ourselves right now. And state planning for oil spills around waterways began in 1989 with Exxon Valdez. And you would think that over time that we would have learned. And if this is like if a tree falls in the forest. If a train explodes in Oregon or Washington, the cavalry could be an hour away or longer. It's not going to be easy to get to any of the areas where these proposed routes are going to be at where the hazard is going to be worse, of course. And finding out where crude oil trains are going, what neighborhoods are fit, that's what the risk is. There's a great many more. We're going now, fortunate to have Ingrid Burrington with us to talk about the architecture of surveillance. Good morning, Ingrid. I'm so glad you could be with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I liked your piece very, very much. I put many pages of it up on the walls. Could you tell our listeners what you did? Can you take us there? You mean it's radio, but can you give us a visual tour?
Sure. So I had been doing some research on the role of private contractors in the production of mass surveillance. A lot of the work that has been receiving a lot of attention and criticism that the NSA has been doing wouldn't really exist if they didn't have dozens and dozens of people working in the private sector, helping them build the tools, in many cases provide the analysis, and generally kind of be part of the support structure. So in trying to understand that industry, I tried to understand it in its role in like the physical world. It's very easy to get kind of lost in like the array of like lots of different companies and all these different abstract things, especially when it comes to online surveillance. So I focused on this one office park that is actually like right next to the NSA. There's a road that connects the complex directly into the NSA. They have overflow parking on their grounds.
Like a spy mall.
Sorry?
Like a spy mall, sort of. Maybe.
Kinda. Yeah, it's the piece architecture of surveillance is meditation on what can be learned from these facades of the architectural facades and corporate facades that belie mass surveillance. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely, and it is the actual physical architecture. And again, it's so difficult to put it in words. You have to see the pictures, but it is exactly identical to corporate America's vision of itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's really interesting about looking at these buildings and these facades that are, you know, admittedly kind of boring looking, is that it tells you a lot about how plausible deniability, the ability to say, like, oh, like, this isn't that bad, this, no one's really responsible, is partly played out in these physical manifestations.
Yeah, much has been said throughout history about the blandness of evil.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't possibly have a more stark reminder of that evil and that very blandness. You want to tell people where they can find the pictures, because you really have to see them. I want to invite you to come back tomorrow when we will actually have the phone number up in front of our eyes as the show opens. Talk a little bit more about it. But just for now, could you let listeners know where they can have a look at the piece that you wrote?
Yeah,
this Architecture of Surveillance.
Yeah, the piece is actually on two websites. It's currently on Waging Nonviolence, and it's also at Creative Time Reports.
Thanks so much for that. We're out of time for today. And to all listeners out there, thanks for hanging in with us. Well, we got Ingrid on the line. We'll like to invite her back tomorrow to talk more about it. Once you've had a chance to take a look at the photos, then we will be able to really get into it in depth. This has been, of course, Air Cascadia for Tuesday, January 14th, 2014. Janet Anderson did an extraordinary, far above the call of duty job on the board this morning. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOOA News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
U.S. sailors wounded by Fukushima getting sicker by the day. We'll have Gareth Porter on former Defense Secretary Robert Gates' new book, and the mayor of Sebastopol, California, takes a bold action to protect undocumented workers. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Miguel Gavila Molina. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And, well, we turn our attention to revelations coming out of a new book by Robert Gates, who worked with two administrations as a Secretary of Defense and apparently wasn't very happy with Obama. But there's a bigger story here. It's important in the context of what's going on, Afghan war and all the related connections. And so we're delighted to be joined by Gareth Porter, who writes about these things, has a new piece called Gates Conceals Real Story of Gaming Obama on Afghan War. And, well, it's good to have you back, Gareth Porter. So set the scene here. Gates has definitely been on the... various talk shows. He's been on every freaking possible network and show you can imagine.
Yeah, Gates has gotten an awful lot of network time and ink in recent days. And, you know, the interesting thing about Gates, of course, is that he plays his sort of senior wise man bipartisan role to the hilt and, you know, enjoys being the guy who is looked up to by the news media as beyond partisanship and so forth. And he's been able to really have it both ways. On one hand, suggesting that he was not at all happy, as you indicated in your intro, with President Obama on his handling of Afghanistan specifically. And on the other hand, you know, basically saying, well, I agreed with all of President Obama's decisions on Afghanistan. And I think that, you know, the real story, as you've correctly said, is that he's not leveling with the viewers and readers on his relationship to the major decision on or decisions on the escalation of the war in Afghanistan. And I referred specifically in my story to